I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus.
In the beginning of the race, we sang the national anthem. It was like a worship song, and I realized this was worship in one of the best cities in China. And people from all nations and ethnicities and languages came here, and they sang this hymn. But we were running for a medal which can perish. This might not be the last marathon I want to run, but from now on, I wanted to run a better race. I wanted to run for a medal that would not perish.
By all accounts, Jacob's life was a picture of success. He grew up in an intellectual family and went to one of China's best universities. He was young, ambitious, and an extremely accomplished businessman. He was running hard after the China dream. But then he did something wholly unexpected. He laid down that dream in favor of another, becoming a pastor of a Chinese house church. This new race was not one that would be easy. In the days ahead, he would uproot his life to move to a new country, and then uproot it again to return to China. He would face the challenge of church planting during the COVID-19 pandemic, and the challenge of increasing persecution. Through it all, he would continue running. Why would Jacob surrender a lucrative future for an uncertain and precarious life? What does the race of faith look like for many first-generation Christians in China's megacities? When the race becomes more and more difficult, what motivates him to keep on running?
This is the House Church in China. This podcast is the true story of a man who is seeking to run his race with endurance. Jacob is running to get the prize, a crown that would not fade or perish. This is the story of his marathon of faith.
Calm, calm my heart. Fill me with your joy and songs of love and show your ways.
In the first season of our podcast, we explored the story of Yang Xiaohui, an uneducated village orphan who was thrown in jail for her unbending faith. Her story is true to the experience of a lot of Chinese Christians. But China is a massive country. There are many stories. You can make one statement about China that is true for a lot of people, but you can also make a contradictory statement that is true for a lot of other people. When we shared Xiaohui's story, we opened a window into the modern Chinese house church. This season, we'll crack open a different window.
Through Jacob's story, we'll see someone who found every trapping of success. But in the end, he realizes that success itself is a trap. Life is not found in riches or esteem or even in being a good servant of God. Jesus alone is the fount of life. Success in school, in business, and even in church planting can actually be a curse. Jacob knows this firsthand. Not only can success feed pride, in China, success can draw unwanted attention that cripples ministry and brings the potential for physical danger. As Jacob runs his race, he knows he does not run alone. As he strains forward to what lies ahead, he runs alongside a multitude of other believers. Some walk in his shoes, others cross his path for only a brief period. But the Lord has used all of them to support him in his long race. And just like in all races, this race has a beginning. It begins when Jacob was just a kid, when his dad, a staunch atheist, taught him to seek the truth.
Do everything seriously. Dig deep. Keep on asking questions. My dad always encouraged me to ask the why questions.
Both his parents were university professors in a city we'll call Shenzhou, a Chinese metropolis. Like most Chinese of his generation, Jacob is an only child. His parents had high expectations for his academic success. They make sure he knew the high standards Chinese traditions laid out for him. They taught him to take facts seriously. He not only needed to know what he believed, he needed to know why. His dad was driven by consistency. His dad's commitment to verifiable truth was so strong that when their family went to their ancestral tomb every year to honor the dead, he refused to take part because he didn't believe in ancestor worship. Jacob's mom shared his dad's atheism, but she didn't think burning incense was really ancestor worship. It was just their culture's way to honor family and be a filial daughter. But Jacob's dad was adamant.
He was just standing there and said, "Everyone is showing off to one another." He helped with driving and he helped with food, but my dad never did that.
Because Jacob saw how much his dad valued truth and consistency over appearance, it bothered him that the same attitude was not present in other places, places like school. He was in elementary school when the Soviet Union collapsed. Before its collapse, Mongolia was the world's largest landlocked country. But Jacob saw on the news that after the split, Kazakhstan became the biggest. His teacher told him it didn't really matter what the truth was. They were preparing for a nationwide exam of middle school students, and they needed to stick to the party line.
During the exam, we had to follow not the fact, but the book. This was my education.
Truth was not as important as parroting what authorities told them. Conformity beat out facts. Jacob's goal was to conform to his family's academic expectations and pursuit of success. He didn't think much about faith when he was a kid. Religion and spirituality were considered superstitious, like ancestor worship. Once, his grandparents took him to a Catholic church as a cultural learning experience. He was terrified by a statue of bloody Jesus, suffering nightmares after the visit. That was his only first-hand exposure to Christianity as a child.
In high school, Jacob did what all other driven Chinese youths do. He applied to join the Communist Party. By the 1990s in China, joining the party was not usually an ideological move. Adam Nee explains the situation in Australian newspaper The Sydney Morning Herald. Quote, "It's a vehicle for upward social mobility in China. So if you're somebody ambitious, if you're smart, then it's the best way to move up the social ladder." End quote. But Jacob's application to join the party didn't go through. He learned he was too young to apply in high school with the rest of his class because he started school earlier than his peers. When he tried again in college, he decided to defer because the meeting time slot conflicted with another obligation. And in the meantime, he met Jesus. So how did Jacob become a Christian? For some mysterious reason, Jacob's faith is intertwined with sports. He was running a marathon when God clearly called him to ministry. He was playing basketball when he met Jesus. In college in his hometown of Shenzhou, Jacob joined his university's amateur basketball team. Some Westerners were playing alongside him. They were Christians, and they told him about God.
"When I heard about grace, there was no grace in my house. all the time, I should do better and better. I know my dad loved me, but I just don't feel his love. He's a typical Chinese dad. He said a lot of good things about me among his friends and family members, but he never said those things to me. I still remember the first time he said good job to me. I was 27, going to grad school.
In college, Jacob began to read the Bible with his foreign friends, young missionaries from the United States. These friends were smart. Some were Ivy League grads, and Jacob respected their intellect. When they patiently explained about Jesus, his death, and his resurrection, Jacob believed them. He began to read the Gospels, and he asked lots of questions. But one day, he realized he needed to exercise faith instead of demanding proof from God.
I was terrified. I thought, if you are the Lord who created heaven and earth, how dare I question you this way? I never said to my professor, if you answer all my questions, I will register for a class. I realized you don't doubt authority. I read the scriptures. I knew he is the God who shows steadfast love to me. He is the God who, when people spit on his face, he prayed for them. That is the moment that enlightened me. I want to be a follower and learner.
He was especially pulled towards the fellowship of other young Chinese believers in his university. When this only child encountered this family of believers, he found another home and brothers and sisters.
I was attracted a lot by the Christian community.
In childhood, he competed academically with other only children who filled his school and his classes. Often, those kids were more competitors than friends. On the basketball team at college, rivalry was intense. If a player got hurt, teammates might be happy, hoping to take his spot in the lineup. But the believers seemed different. They were humble and grace-filled.
The church fellowship was a very attractive community for me.
In what has remained a consistent struggle throughout his life, the biggest obstacle in Jacob's newfound faith was success. In the early days, success took the form of legalism. Growing up, Jacob strived to be the top in everything. In his new community, the same pattern continued. He shared his faith, memorized Bible verses, invited others to join the fellowship, and he was praised. But the compliments were dangerous.
My first year in the fellowship, I brought the most people there. I am not good at music, but I memorized hymn lyrics and put them in my prayers. I did all this crazy stuff to be a good Christian. I feel they care more about my ability to share the gospel instead of caring about me.
Throughout college, Jacob remained involved in the ministry at his university. This fellowship was sort of like a small group. He and a few other guys got together to study the Bible and sing hymns.
The 1990s and 2000s were a period of openness within China. In those years, believers from many countries, especially the United States and South Korea, intentionally moved to China to share their faith. Many of them ended up on college campuses, where they could learn Chinese, teach English, and interact with curious young students. Chinese authorities were aware of these groups, but often chose to turn a blind eye to them. There was a dance of plausible deniability going on. Missionaries could not be overt in their activities. In response, government officials occasionally squashed, but largely ignored, the small fellowships forming on campuses across the country. Many young Chinese embraced Christ during these years, laying the foundation for a different type of Chinese Christian community. Historically, Chinese Christianity was based in the countryside. After the Communist Party took over China in 1949, the Chinese house churches endured years of intense persecution, particularly in the tumultuous years of the Cultural Revolution from 1966 to 1976. Most Chinese believers were uneducated peasants during this time. After the country opened up in the 1980s, some of those house churches moved into the city, but new, college-educated Christians did not fit in easily with the older, traditional house churches. House churches also did not really trust these new Christians, who were often discipled by young foreigners who did not deeply understand China. Often, house churches were unwilling to receive these new converts. As a result, Jacob, and many others in situations like his, began their Christian lives without the church.
Because of the social and security environment, at university, our college fellowship did not have much connection with the local church.
So while Jacob was baptized in his fellowship, he never took the Lord's Supper. Occasionally, he attended conferences that brought together Christians from other university fellowships.
It was like a church service setup, but it was not regular.
This was confusing. The ministry he was involved in challenged him to consider becoming a full-time Christian worker, but he wasn't interested.
The only thing I feared was becoming a full-time minister. I prayed to God and promised some missionaries that if I got a good job, I would be a good donor.
Once he graduated college, Jacob's phone number changed. And due to an accident, he was out of the dorms his last months in college and wasn't able to contact old friends. In an instant, he lost touch with his college fellowship, his only Christian community. This is China, remember? Jacob couldn't just find a Christian community in the phone book or on the internet. Besides, he wanted to concentrate on other things. He was chasing success in the next arena that presented itself, the business world.
I put all my time into my career for a year and a half. I knew there was something wrong. I knew God was there. I brought my Bible along all the time, even when I was traveling, but I never read it.
Jacob knew things were off and that God was the only solution, but he didn't want to go back. Yet, after 18 months, the struggle in his heart was so strong. That's when an old friend invited him to join the tiny house church she was attending.
I knew I needed some kind of, I didn't use the term church life, but a Christian community.
And that's when Jacob's life took on another unexpected turn.
Speak peace to your people. Speak peace to your...
On the next episode of The House Church in China.
I didn't want to go back to church, so I booked a business trip. But this sister kept asking me. She brought me to a small home. There were less than 20 people. Somebody shared and we sang hymns. It was similar to the college fellowship. Most of them are young people, the same age. I saw one to two familiar faces from my college fellowship, and I felt safe.
We'll cover all the earth, and His glory now fills the land. Speak peace to your
Well, welcome back, everyone. We're excited to be back for a second season of the House Church in China podcast. Ryan, it's great to be here with you.
Yes, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I am Hannah Nation. I am China Partnership's content director. I'm also the managing director for the Center for House Church Theology.
And my name is Ryan Zhang. I am the translation manager for China Partnership. I'm also a pastor in a PCA church in Cincinnati, Ohio.
So, Ryan, one of the things that I thought it might be good for us to touch on and explain to you, our audience a little bit, is just pseudonyms and the fact that we're using them and why we're using them.
Yeah, so we use the pseudonym Shenzhou for Jacob City because in China, a lot of cities are named Guangzhou, something, something, Zhou. So Zhou means city. And Shenzhou is kind of like the city of, sounds like city of God or the divine city. But it's also a very ancient title for China. For centuries, China referred to itself as Shenzhou, the divine land, the divine city.
That's fascinating. We also are using a pseudonym for Jacob. Jacob is obviously not his real name. I don't know. I like the pseudonym. We chose it for a lot of different reasons, partially just because, as we'll find out later in the season, Jacob has spent time in the U.S. And he's also from a major city. Shenzhou is the pseudonym for a major city in China. And most of my Chinese friends that I know from major cities have chosen and adopted English names, and especially if they spent time in the U.S. And so it's just kind of, it's a good nod to who he is, but it's also hopefully a good way to help make him more personable or more give a connection point for American listeners, just because his life is honestly really not too different from the lives of probably most of our people who are listening.
Yeah.
So I thought in this first episode, maybe, Ryan, I could do a little mini interview of you because I think you probably have a lot of things in common with Jacob in some ways. So I don't know. First off, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself? I don't know how many people who are listening know much of your personal story or your background. And so maybe you could just give us like 30-second Ryan's life, story of your life.
Yeah. So I was born in China in the 1980s, maybe a few years younger than Jacob. But I also grew up in Chinese school system until I was 12. And then I immigrated to America. And I was also born in a major city in China. So a lot of what he said about his childhood resonated with me.
There's a lot that we talk about. I think some of the things that jumped out to be most are just his interactions with his dad, his kind of relationship to his dad and Chinese parenting styles, and then also his experiences with the Chinese education system. So I don't know. I mean, is there anything regarding his family life and parenting that you would say is familiar or anything that's different from what you experienced?
It's very familiar to me, just one, because parental expectations are really high. As in Chinese culture, you are expected to honor your family by having a successful life. And also you are the last person in your family. You're the newest person in your family. So you are taking over the family name and you are supposed to lift it high and you are supposed to succeed where your parents didn't succeed. And if they were successful, then you were supposed to match them or even supersede them. So given his parents were professors, I'm sure there was really high academic expectations for him. And also when you go to school, teachers were like demigods that you were supposed to respect and honor them because they were elderly, they were authority figures. So when he talked about respecting authorities and even respecting authorities over facts, that's a very true struggle because You know, Chinese education is not so much of an exchange between students and teachers, and students asking teachers and questioning and cultivating inquisitive minds, but it's more like a lecturer talking and many students just taking notes quietly and copying and parroting what the authorities say, especially under this current regime. And it's very important to know what is the proper answer according to authorities, not so much according to what is actually real. And actually, there's an example I thought of recently. I talked to an urban planner who studied overseas and went back to work in China for a few years. And she had a struggle that when they were looking into data and urban planning, they were not so much interested in what actually happened, what's happening, but they were wondering what data she could provide that would support what the authorities wanted to implement in the first place. So her goal is not so much to do her own independent research, but to actually provide data to support the government's position.
I'm curious to know, Ryan, you know, I think obviously the system of education is very different. And there's a lot that Jacob says that's critical of the system of education. I think you'd resonate with a lot of that. But I'm also curious to know, you know, what are some of the good things that you got from it? Or what are some of the things that, you know, you could take away from the first, you know, 6 years of your education and think, yeah, that was good. I'm really glad that I benefited from it in that way.
Yeah, I think the respectful attitude and humility, I think that's helpful to know that even as I come here, I know I learn stuff, I am still learning and I'm still a student and teachers are my teachers, and to be respectful to them. That really helped my relationship with my teachers throughout my whole life. And also, you know, respecting my parents and also kind of striving to succeed. And I think there's some virtue in that, even within Christian circle, right? You know, grace is not opposed to effort. It's just opposed to earning. So there is an effort to succeed, to seek excellence. And I think that is very much true.
That's cool. I'm curious, one last question, just, you know, as you kind of, your early years of education, you shared similar experiences with Jacob. We talked a lot about his, just the things that in his life that helped him seek for truth, especially that kind of big T, capital T idea of truth. You know, his dad's lack of desire to just parrot, you know, things that weren't true. I'm curious to hear in your own life, just what are some of the influences in your life that kind of similarly helped you seek that big T understanding of truth?
Yeah, I think it came gradually. The one, I left China when I was 12, so I was still young, and maybe if I had lived in China more and went through school there longer, I may have also started questioning things a little bit more. But I think growing up, my struggle was that what was in the books must be true. And I think it was kind of eye-opening to me in maybe later high school or early college when I realized, oh, there are perspectives to different things, even in history books, that what's in the textbook, it may not be totally neutral. And there are different perspectives. News anchors have different angles, they report stuff, and that was a big eye-opening understanding to me that I need to seek truth, but not just what's reported in a textbook or in the news. And that made me start to seek other answers and think more critically about what I've heard.
So interesting. All right. Well, we have a great season ahead of us. We're excited to share Jacob's story with you. As always, we love hearing feedback from you, any thoughts or questions that you might have. We'll see you on the next episode.
Yep, thank you.
The House Church in China podcast is written by E.F. Gregory and Ryan Zhang and is a production of China Partnership. It is hosted by me, Hannah Nation.
And by me, Ryan Zhang.
Jacob is read by Richard D. To protect their identity, we are using pseudonyms for Chinese citizens. Sound engineering by John Stewart and mixing by Robbie Breckenridge. Our songs this week are Psalm 4 and Speak Peace by Daniel Snook. Additional music provided by IB Audio. All our scripture quotations this week are taken from the ESV Bible. Special thanks to City Reform Presbyterian Church for use of their space and equipment. And please, as you finish listening to this episode, take a moment to pray for the church in China. Calm, calm my